We are inching closer to the Stanley Cup playoffs. We've got some teams that have clinched, some that are close. And I think, Sean, the Florida Panthers and Toronto Maple Leafs might have just scored another goal. 13, a little old-time 1980s hockey between these two teams on a Tuesday night as we record this Wednesday. What'd you think of that?
I thought it was a game that neither coach is going to like. I certainly liked it. I'm sure the players had a lot of fun playing it, you know, late in the season, a little reprieve before things turned to playoff mode. But I think both coaches are looking at it and are saying, we can't play this way. Florida has done it twice in the last three games. They did it against New Jersey, and they did it against the more quality opponent in the Toronto Maple Leafs. But for the Maple Leafs, I think it's an awful ending to what's been a really good run. Right, they've played really well. You start getting excited about them. They're about to sweep Florida, where two of the best teams reside, and the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who they beat 6-2. And then they get up 5-1 on Florida, and you're like, oh boy, like maybe Toronto's finally figured it all out. What's the one thing a playoff team needs to be able to do? They need to be able to shut down a game. You're up 5-1. Do not take a chance. Do not try and score another goal. Do not do anything to give your opponent hope. What did the Toronto Maple Leafs do? They didn't shut it down. I don't believe they can shut it down. So it's going to be like the Edmonton Oilers. Can you outscore your opponent in the playoffs? And if you want to play that way, good luck. Cross your fingers and hope not to die.
Look, I 100% agree with you. In fact, our guest today, who is Carolina Hurricanes coach Rod Brind'Amour, knows how to lock it down. He knows how to coach a team to lock it down. We'll talk to Rod in a little bit, and we may even get into a little bit of how you do that, locking it down in these tight type of games and what you do to coach your team up in that sense. But you are 100% right, Sean. Like I thought that it was exciting. You want 13 goals in a game, you know, a 5-1 down, a team climbs back, goes up 6-5, then it's 6-6, and they win. Then the team that was down by the four wins it in overtime. I thought that was terrific, fun, exciting, great entertainment. But you're right, and I was thinking bigger picture as I was, you know, watching that game unfold, and my bigger picture on that was, man, I don't know about either of these two teams in the playoffs, because as good as Florida has been, and they've been terrific this season, so offensive, you question, can Toronto lock it down? Can Florida do it? Can Florida rely on these types of, you know, performances? I don't see it. I don't see how you can do that. They're going to play a bet. You know, it's going to be a 7-game series, and you know how it goes in a 7-game series. You know, your tendencies get picked apart, and you have to be able to win low scoring games. Florida couldn't do that last season against Tampa. I wonder if they're going to be able to do it this season with their goaltending and the way they're playing defense. They can score. We know that. But you cannot outscore opponents and win 16 games in a playoffs. You cannot play that style to outscore opponents and win 16 games in the playoffs. Both of these teams try to do it. So you question Toronto, Sean. I question Florida too.
There's that history there against Tampa last year where everybody was like, oh, well, they had that opportunity and they're going to learn from it. And you wonder what they've learned from it. But if I'm holding those two teams on the scales of justice, Florida is way ahead of Toronto. A, they can score more.
Like, deeper. Yeah,
they're deeper. They've scored more goals this year. They have a better goal differential. I believe in Bobrovsky more than I believe in a Campbell who's just coming back from an injury, even though Bobrovsky's been pulled the last two games. I certainly believe in Spencer Knight more than I believe in Shulgren. I believe in Florida's defense more than I believe in Toronto's defense. So, sure, I think you're concerned about everybody. I think we could go through the whole NHL right now and pick something we're overly concerned about with each team, including the Colorado Avalanche, who have been the best team in the league all year. There's things, you know, injuries, whatever you want to point out, their goaltending. But I'm way more concerned about Toronto, especially with their psyche. This is a team mm-hmm. that hasn't been able to win in the playoffs. And like I said, you know, the good vibes start rolling. Auston Matthews is on a run like we haven't seen in forever. Same thing with Mitch Marner. And you know, they're playing well. They're beating good teams. And you're like, okay, maybe they get it now. And then they don't get it.
Yeah. And it's their goaltending too, right? I mean, you really, you know how good they can be up front. And when they have those moments where they just lose it, you need a goalie who can make a save. Like, and I just don't see it. But so now if you're Toronto, right, you're in that situation here. See, hold on, backtrack. If you're Florida, you're in a situation where you're probably looking at Washington in the first round. And of the teams in the East, Washington scares me the least, and that's why they're probably in that position. So I think if you're Florida, you're okay. You got to feel pretty good. But I still wonder. I still wonder as it goes on, you know, if they can get out of that first round, can they play a style that's more of a 2-1, 3-1 type of game? Can they win those games? We've seen Tampa Bay do it, and that's how you win the Stanley Cup. But if you're Toronto, Tampa Bay could be your first opponent, or Boston could be your first opponent. And those two teams have the knowledge of how to do these things in the playoffs. Whereas you're Toronto, you never quite figure it out. And to me, it goes one of two ways, right? I mean, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you look at it and say, if it's Tampa Bay, right? Well, if we're finally going to get over the hump, it's beating the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs. I mean, we're going to do it big, right? Or you're going to fade again. And then all kinds of questions. Imagine the offseason if the Toronto Maple Leafs lose in the first round again, right? And it's a very real possibility. So there's a ton of pressure on the Toronto Maple Leafs to try to get this done. And they cannot play that style of hockey and expect to win a first round series against any team that they're going to face in the East, especially with their goaltending.
No, and if you're playing Tampa Bay, are you willing to put money on the fact that they can score 3 goals a game against the best goalie in the league, the best playoff goalie that we've seen in a long time? I'm not.
And even if they do, I could see Tampa Bay scoring 5.
Well, exactly. But you know Tampa Bay is going to score at least 2.
Right.
So you're talking about 3 a game against Vasilevsky. And where do they come from against the team that's going to turn it on? As soon as they, you know, play the video montage and say, hey, welcome to the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to change. They're not going to be the team that lost 6-2 against the Toronto Maple Leafs this week. They just won't.
They won't be. No, they won't be. And actually, Sean, it actually brings me to a point I want to make. I was actually stunned. This week in our Super 16, you put the Tampa Bay Lightning 10th. I was a little shocked by that because I know how much you believe in them, but I have them 5 in our Super 16 this week. I have Toronto 4 because, you know, look, I got to give Toronto a little bit of credit here for the 6-2 win. I don't like what happened, but, you know, I am going to give them credit for that win. You have Toronto 8th. Fine. Tampa Bay 10th. I give you the floor.
Yeah, it killed me to do it. I do believe in them, and I do believe that they're going to come around. But right now, they're not playing well. I think, you know, John Cooper will tell you that they're playing Washington as we, you know, tape this on Wednesday. They're playing Washington tonight. It's going to be a huge game for them, you know, just to try and get their confidence back. I think, you know, we do this again in 2 weeks, they're probably going to be moved up a little bit, but the results right now just kind of forced me as I went along and I tried to fit everybody in, right? Like Minnesota's coming off a 10-game winning streak. Mm-hmm. You know, Boston's the best team in the NHL since January 1st. It's first or second best. My New York Rangers, so I got to put them in there someplace. So, and then you got to put Toronto ahead of them with the way they were playing and the fact that they lost head-to-head. And then, you know, is it Pitt? Is it Tampa Bay? I mean, Pitt lost twice to Colorado this week, and you got to hold out against them a little bit. But I think they might give Tampa Bay the biggest series out of all of them. So I think they're coming back up. But to be fair in how I do my Super 16, that's where they ended up.
All right. I'll give you that. So, by the way, we both did have – I had Carolina 3rd. You had them 4th, and we will be joined in a little while by Carolina Hurricanes coach Rod Brendamore. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Sean, I wanted to ask you though. So we talked a lot about Toronto, and we don't want to, you know, be so negative when you know you have two superstars there in Austin Matthews and Mitchell Marner. We've talked so much on this podcast this season about the Edmonton Oilers. putting the spotlight, of course, on, you know, some of the struggles that they have, similar to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but you have to spotlight Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl as well. So I want to ask you this question, and the best, what's a better duo right now for you? Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner, or Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl? And I ask this question throwing these numbers at you. Matthews leads the league in goals right now as we record this, 54 goals. He's going to get 60 this season. He's fourth in points with 95, 1.46 points per game. Mitch Marner, 1.44 points per game. That's the same as Leon Draisaitl. And we know Connor McDavid has 106 points this season. Right now, he's first in just about everything except goals. But what do you think? Best duo going right now, McDavid and Draisaitl? Or has Matthews and Marner caught up?
I definitely think they've caught up. And you know, it just, I mean, you mentioned the numbers. I think that they've been dominant. They've been consistent in doing it every night. I think that at times they're doing it against better competition. But Draisaitl and McDavid have done it longer. To me, the more interesting conversation is who's the better player, McDavid or Matthews? Like, it's just a dismissal, which is mind-blowing to me. Well, Connor McDavid's the best player in the league. How are we even having this conversation? It's pointless. It's not pointless. Like, Auston Matthews, what he's done since he's come into the league is unbelievable. You think about it. He came into the league in 2016-17. Who in the NHL scored the most goals since the day he first laced on skates and scored in his first game?
I'm going to guess Matthews.
It's Auston Matthews, 253. Alex Ovechkin has 247. Draisaitl has 228. And Connor has 220. Granted, Connor has 100 and almost 200 points more with the assists and everything else he's had. But Auston Matthews is scoring at a rate that we've so rarely seen in this league. I think it's a fair conversation to have that, you know, maybe there is a new guy at the top. I don't know that I'm ready to put him there, but to have that conversation dismissed out of hand, to me, is ludicrous at this point. It's been 5 years of excellence, you know, and it's Toronto, and people want to dismiss it because Toronto's the center of the hockey universe. And I think, you know, as much as players are celebrated, they're also punished for being from Toronto. That there's this, oh, well, it's Toronto and everybody's going to take the Maple Leafs side on everything. And, you know, it's the center of the universe. I think sometimes Auston Matthews gets punished because he's a Toronto Maple Leaf. He is better than people give him credit for.
It kind of reminds me of a couple of years ago, I did a story with Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid. And it was a question because at the time, Nathan MacKinnon was just taking the hockey world by storm. And was he the one that caught up to Connor to become the best player in the league? All the while understanding that there is still a guy in Pittsburgh who's still pretty darn good, right? In Sidney Crosby. But that, it kind of reminds me of that. And at the time with the MacKinnon McDavid argument, I was leaning more towards MacKinnon just because I simply thought he could take control of a game more. His speed was similar, but his overall 200-foot game was better. And he was just dominant with the puck and, you know, just taking over. McDavid does the same thing. But now I look at Matthews and I say, well, I think his 200-foot game might be a little bit better than Connor McDavid's. And he can take over a game similar to the way McDavid does. But he doesn't have the McDavid speed. He doesn't push everybody back the way Connor McDavid does. And it brings me to this point. Sometimes when you're the best, people look for flaws, and they're always looking for flaws in your game to try to compare you to somebody else who's coming up at you and getting close. There's no question to me that Auston Matthews is in the discussion. Nathan MacKinnon is in the discussion. Connor McDavid's the best player in the league, in my opinion. Does that mean he's the MVP this year? I don't know. I think there's an argument for a lot of guys. But to me, Connor McDavid, with everything he can do, the way he pushes a defense back, the amount of production you get out of him, goal scoring, assists, every time he's on the ice, the puck is on his stick and he's dangerous. I mean, he's got 106 points this season. He's got 27 points in the last 14 games. And in those games, the Oilers are 11-2-1. All right. So I think sometimes we look at Connor McDavid and we look for flaws and we look for reasons not to put him at the top. But I think we really have to put him at the top. He is the top.
Yeah, he may well be, but I think there's a legitimate argument to have in this regard and to put other players in there. I mean, at times I would put his teammate there. Is Leon Draisaitl a better player than Connor McDavid? At times I think he is. I just don't think it's a slam dunk that people make it out to be, especially when you think about the fact that it's a three-quarter game for Connor McDavid. I don't think I'm upsetting the apple cart and making a huge revelation and saying that his game in his own end is not ideal. And is that part of being the best player? I think it is. And I think Austin Matthews is better in that regard. And I think Austin Matthews is still trending up. And he may not have caught Connor McDavid yet, but it's closer than a lot of people are willing to give credit to for Austin Matthews. And I think it'll be even closer next year.
Do you differentiate between most talented player and best player?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you would have to, because there's a lot of players in this league that have unbelievable talent that aren't very good. Or are only good on certain nights, right? Like they can't put it all together. They don't have the mental fortitude to do it. They don't, you know, they get checked out of games. Like, and so I think, you know, there's players that have talent to be elite in this league that aren't, for a variety of reasons. But the best players take their God-given talent and apply it in a way that other talented players can't. Because almost everybody in the league is talented at this point. I mean, you know, so what differentiates one player from another? It's his ability to take his talent and make the most out of it, game in and game out. It's easy to be good in this league when you're talented. It's extremely hard to be consistently good in this league, even when you're talented.
Yeah, and that's why I give the nod to McDavid, because he does all of that. But you're right, there is an argument to be had. But let's look at the Oilers. How about this? It's a good segue to the Edmonton Oilers. Five straight wins as we speak right now, and they've won in different ways. You know, they blew out Arizona and they blew out Anaheim, and they win in overtime against St. Louis in a high-scoring game. They win in overtime against San Jose in a low-scoring game, and they lose in a shootout against and they win in a shootout against LA. McDavid's been dominant. Draisaitl is dealing with a little bit of an injury right now. He didn't play in that game against San Jose, but I think he'll be all right. Are you buying Edmonton, Sean? I even with all of this, and they're playing well, 11-2-1 in the last 14 games as we speak now, I still find it hard to buy any team in that division except Calgary.
Well, what am I buying?
Are you buying? Well, here's the thing, because, right, this is a great question, because if they're in a 2-3 matchup, they got a really good chance to get out of that and win a playoff round, right? But are you buying the fact that they can legitimately contend to go longer in the playoffs against, in a 7-game series, against teams like Calgary, and if it comes to pass, Minnesota, Colorado, any of those teams? Do you think that they can withstand it with what they have versus what some of these other teams have?
No. No, I don't see them getting out of the second round, and I hope they prove me wrong. I do, but like, where does it come from? Where does the third line and fourth line scoring come from?
Right.
Again, how did Tampa Bay go deep all these times? Their third line. Right. Sure, they had their top guys going, Kucherov's going, this guy's going, but it was their third line that scored huge goals all the time when they needed it. And what else did they have? A goaltender that's going to steal you one game every round. He's going to steal you four games as you go along. Mike Smith going to do that? Koskinen going to do that?
Might get a game, but not enough, you know. Yeah.
Mike Smith in Edmonton is 0-5 in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He hasn't won a playoff game for him yet.
So here's my concern with where Edmonton is right now. If I were, you know, it's something I think they have to guard against, right? Because I 100% agree with you. I don't think that they are good enough to get out of the second round. I certainly think they're good enough to get out of the first round if it's LA or if it's Vegas, based on, you know, depending on injuries. If it's Vegas and guys are healthy, you remember the cap's not an issue, that becomes a whole different ball of wax for me if it's Vegas, right? But LA, I give him a lot of, you know, a better chance against LA. And I want to get into that LA Vegas race in a little bit here, but my concern with them is that feeling of winning a playoff round being good, almost good enough for the season that they've had. That includes a coaching change and a fight to get in the playoffs. And then they go in and they win a playoff round. I think it could be a little bit of fool's gold because you're not beating a legitimate, you know, dynamic contending team if you're in that spot. And then you go into the offseason thinking that you're right there. Oh, you're right there, right? And you're not. You're not right there, especially if it goes in the second round, like we think it could go in the second round, whoever they play, if it's Calgary, you know, and they lose in five or whatever they, you know, even if they lose in six and it's not quite that close. It's a little bit of fool's gold there. I think that's going to be a, you know, something to watch here for Edmonton. I know I'm speaking way down the road on this and we don't know what's going to happen, but a playoff round win is a big deal for the Edmonton Oilers. It just can't be too big of a deal. You understand what I'm saying?
Look, to get out of the first round in the playoffs this year is going to be a major accomplishment for anybody that does it. There is no easy matchup in the playoffs this year. When you think about, you know, who's going to play who, and you know, I'm sure we'll probably talk about this to Rod a little bit when we talk to the Carolina Hurricanes coach, like they're going to have a hard match in the first round too, no matter who they draw. It's just the way it is. There's parity like we've never seen before, and nobody's getting that eight where they're just like, oh, that's okay. Like, I'll take that. Like, that's my reward for finishing first. You talked about the Washington Capitals. I don't know that, you know, they might be the easiest team to beat in the East, but they're not easy. So I think getting into the second round is going to be a huge accomplishment this year. But what do you do once you get there? And what's the matchup going to be like? And, you know, if Edmonton draws Calgary, like, to me, there's such a difference in those teams. There's just the goal differential. Mm-hmm. It's 53 goals. Calgary better than Edmonton. They can score. They did score against Edmonton the last time they played them, or two times ago when they played them. No, the last time they played them. And then they could shut them down. They could shut anybody down. They've shut everybody down. They win in goaltending and they win in defense. So, and they're not that far behind first line against first line. They're not as good. But they're not out of the ballpark. So to me, they're just a way deeper team. And it would be an upset of pretty good proportions, I would think, if Edmonton were to win a playoff battle of Alberta.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And look, we, like I said, we don't know how it's going to shake out right now. If it ends up being Edmonton-Vegas in a first-round matchup, and Vegas all of a sudden has a bunch of guys back, right? Now we're talking a totally different Vegas team, too. And oh, by the way, the Vegas Golden Knights have won five games in a row as we speak right now on Wednesday. And I wrote in my mailbag a couple of weeks ago, they were hitting a soft part of their schedule, March 26th through April 12th, seven games, right? Chicago, Seattle, Vancouver three times, and Arizona. So far in that, including a win against Nashville before this started, 4-0 in that soft spot, count the win against Nashville, it's five straight. They are finding ways to win the games they're supposed to win. We talked about this a little bit last week too. So they're climbing back in and maybe getting healthier at the same time. You know, it's they're buying some time for their guys to come back too. And it's not like it doesn't get like so difficult for Vegas either as it goes on. Yes, they have Calgary and Edmonton, but New Jersey, Washington, San Jose, they got Dallas, I think Chicago, St. Louis. I mean, Vegas could get in. They could get into that spot, and they could really spoil whatever plans the Edmonton Oilers or whoever's in that spot might have for their playoffs because of who they are and what they might have coming back.
Yeah, and how deep they've gone and the institutional knowledge they have and the confidence they would have. Like, you don't think that they think they can't shut down the Edmonton Oilers, especially if Robin Lehner's healthy?
Oh yeah.
Of course they do. So yeah, there's no favors here and there's no walkovers. So it's going to be huge. Like, Edmonton's playing really well right now and they need to continue to do it going forward and you know, have that confidence going into the playoffs where, you know, that they believe that they can play in a way they have to play to win. And they know they didn't do it last year. And you hope those lessons are learned. But when all the noise is stopped, when everybody's left the locker room and those guys are sitting there, 20 guys in the room, and they're looking at each other, and deep in their hearts, do they believe that they can win a playoff series playing a shut it down system? And I don't know if they do. And that's death in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I know who can win a playoff series in a shut it down system because they've done it many times before. The Carolina Hurricanes. So we teased it enough. We were able to catch up with Rod Brind'Amour. Switch gears here to the East, to the Hurricanes, and our interview with the Carolina Hurricanes coach, Rod Brind'Amour. Rod, thanks so much for jumping on with us. I want to get right into get your opinion right into a conversation Sean and I were having about the ability to lock down games. It's not necessarily we weren't talking about your team, but you know that Toronto Florida game, 7-6 Florida. You know, has a couple of comebacks now. Toronto can't lock it down. Just from a player perspective and a coach perspective, the challenge of locking down a game, can you kind of go over it and describe what it is in terms of how you approach locking down games?
Well, that's a great question. I think a lot of it depends on who you're playing. So let's give Florida a lot of credit. Like that's a team that's tough to lock down. So you can sit there and say, hey, we got to do it this way or that way, but they're just shoving it down your throat. So, it might be a better strategy is to actually try to go get the next one because, you know, you sit back a little bit, it's like taking an inch, they're going to get take a mile. So, you know, there's kind of different ways to look at it. I'm more on let's go try to get the next one because it's almost like playing prevent defense in football. It's like literally the worst thing that I think I've ever watched, right? When teams just sit back, it's like they just come right down the field. So there's a happy medium. You know, you got to stay aggressive, but you still, you know, obviously you can't take the chances. And that's where I think, you know, you're trying to play with it in there a little bit, but definitely not sitting back. That doesn't work.
On a related note, the common conception seems to be, you know, teams that are really good defensively will be successful in the playoffs because they can shut it down. But the way that you just talked about Florida and maybe Colorado on the other side of the bracket, are those teams that maybe are more offensive than defensive? Are those teams that make you nervous just because of their ability to do so much offensively that it doesn't matter whether you're good defensively or not?
Yeah, pretty much. you're right on. I mean, you can be playing those games and you feel like you got everything in hand and then, you know, bang, bang, bang. And you just say, what just happened? You know, and that's what they have the ability to do. But all those teams you just mentioned, and there's a couple other ones, but it's strange. I think if you could figure out how to just keep playing your game, it seems real easy. But I think what happens is when these teams get down, they're gifted that their chances that they take, they create those great A's that they score on. And they'll give up one. They'll give up a couple, but it's like, you know, the goalie said, and all of a sudden there's boom, 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 it's in your net. So it's, you know, it's tricky to play against those teams for sure.
Big picture, though, I mean, that's regular season hockey. Do you expect it to change now for the playoffs? Or, Rod, are we entering an era here where playoff hockey might become a little bit more like that too?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of it depends, I think, how it gets called. Like if it's kind of, you know, playoffs get more physical and it gets ramped up a little bit and that makes it a little tighter because there's less room to freewheel. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee if there's a lot of penalties called, that makes it tougher because all these teams that we just mentioned have elite power plays, right? They have the skill level. So that makes it actually tougher too. So I don't know. I think it just kind of depends on how we call it. And if it's regular old school kind of playoff hockey where things are let go a little bit, that makes it probably easier to so-called shut it down just because the nature of it, you know, everybody's playing a little tighter and physical and but again, these teams that have all these weapons, that's why I think they're having the success because there's no, you can't take a breath on any line. There's no like, okay, I can get that matchup or this, but wait a minute, that they're going to score just as much as that line. And that makes it tough.
All right, how about your team specifically? We're maybe 10 games out. Everybody's trying to get into playoff mode. Obviously, you guys are. You've been near the top of the division standings since the beginning of the year. What's your biggest concern as you try and finish out the regular season for the Carolina Hurricanes?
Yeah, big concern. I think it's just when we had it last night, it was just typical. You say all the things, let's keep the pedal down, let's go, and then you lay an egg, right? And you're just like, wow, okay. And it's you know, the one thing I appreciate with this group is it's very few and far between that we've done that. But it's, you know, there's that, okay, what are we, 10 games to go. We don't want to pick up bad habits. That's really the whole key for me is let's make sure we're not, you know, something leaky on the boat here. We don't want to put any holes in the boat, right? Like, let's make sure that we're sharpening the knife and doing the right things, because we pick up bad habits here or there, this last stretch, that's only going to bleed into, you know, the playoffs. So it's human nature. I think it's tough for these guys. I give a lot of credit to the Floridas and all these teams in the tops, Colorados. They just keep winning and they just keep playing well. It's not easy to do when really, what are they playing for? I mean, you know, they got 10 games here to kind of, I don't know, what are you really playing for? The playoffs start in 10 games. So give them a lot of credit, I guess, is a long answer to your question. What am I worried about? I'm just worried about the picking up any little bad habits along the way.
You know, and it's interesting you mentioned that too, because I was covering the Rangers Devils game the other night, and I asked Gerard Gallant, how is it a challenge to get up for these teams that are not in the playoff race when you're playing them at this point in the season, when you know you're in? I mean, you may not have the X, you know, the check mark next to your name yet, but you know you're in. And I look at your schedule, you got Buffalo again. 9 of your last 12 games are against teams that are not in. So describe that challenge. And is it harder to get up sometimes for these games?
Well, I just think, like I mentioned, it's you say it's not, and we prepare the same, and we, you know, but I just, there's a little bit of human nature in there that, you know, okay, you get what I'm getting at. It's not disrespecting the other teams, but and I also think on the flip side, some of those games are your tougher games, because those teams that are not in are just freewheeling it, and they got nothing to lose. And so all of a sudden you're getting their best too. And, you know, guys trying to play for jobs and the whole 9 yards. So NHL, every game is tough. If you don't come ready, if you don't play your best, you really, your chances go way down to win the game. So, you know, again, we're focused on, you try to just focus on the next game. Don't look at this 10 game this month. Let's just try to get better every day. And then hopefully that gets us, you know, into the playoffs and go from there.
You know, we started out this conversation talking about defense and the ability to shut it down. Nobody's been better than Carolina this year. You've given up 168 goals, which is the least in the league. Is this, and I know you've had elite goaltending from Freddie, but is this the best group of six defensemen you've had since you've been coaching?
The first year I got here, we were pretty good defensively. We had a real solid group. All six guys were really, I thought, the reason we made it to the last four teams sticking around is because our defense was so solid. So that was good. And then we added a little different kind of flair with the offense. We had Dougie Hamilton for a few years, and, you know, that kind of was a little different kind of mode of defense, more playing offense than actual defense. And then, you know, now we've changed it up again, where we got a few new guys in here. I don't know if it's the best. I know it's a good group. It's solid. And, kind of got a good mix, right? You got guys that can, like you call it, shut it down. And then you got the couple of guys that have a little more offensive flair to them. So it's a good balance.
You know, and Rod, with due respect to Peter Mrazek and James Reimer, with Freddie there now and the way he has played this season, can you describe the difference that makes for those defensemen and for your team in general, just as you gear up now for a playoff run, knowing, you know, like, I mean, you know, in the past it was, who's going to start? Like, is it going to be Peter? Is it going to be James? Well, who's it going to be? Now you kind of, unless something happens, knock on wood, it doesn't, you know who it's going to be. And he's been a guy that's been rock solid for you all year long.
Yeah. I mean, he's had maybe two starts that weren't at his best, and those were his last two. I mean, aside from that, and that's why it's almost shocking. We're like, whoa, what is that? Yeah. You know, he's been so good all year. And, you know, listen, guys, it all comes down to goaltending, right? Like, it just does. And I mean, just take a look at the team that's won the last 2 years, and great team for sure, but they're 100 times better because they have that great goaltender that you just talked about it, allows you to just go play. And when you mess up and he say it, no one's talking about it. Just keep playing. Let's keep playing. When you, you know, a squeaky one goes in, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, you know, maybe we better, you know, not take that opportunity, not go for it as much. And it just, you play on your heels a little bit. So that's, Freddie's done that for our group for sure. You know, for all year. And that's it's a comforting feeling when you got that back there for sure.
Rod, are the playoffs different now than when you were a player in this way? I mean, you've known since January pretty much who 7 of the 8 teams are going to be in the East, and it's a complete meat grinder. Like, there's no, you're not looking at that bracket and saying, oh, I hope I draw this team, that'll be an easy first round. I'm not sure that it was exactly the same way when you were a player. There were first round matchups where you're like, oh, unless something really goes off the rails, we're going to make it into the second round. Has it changed so much with the parity that you almost can never be like, oh,
yeah,
pick your opponent?
Yeah, well, for sure, feels like it lately, the last, you know, few years. Definitely what you mentioned, I remember coming into the and as a player, that 1-8 match was always felt like a mismatch, right? Like, you're not necessarily going to win, but it was highly favored. Let's put it that way. And now forget it. Like, that's kind of what I led to before about, okay, you finish first, who are you going to play? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. You come second. Like really, like, what does it matter on that? It's all going to be, you know, extremely tough no matter what. And, you know, maybe this year more than any 1 through 8, and I'm talking our side of things, like if anyone won a cup out of that, would you be shocked, right? Like, it's, I just feel like there's that top-notch teams and going at it here, and you know, it'll be fun for you guys, that's for sure, because I think all the matches are going to be, you know, really, really tight.
Well, it's fantastic. Especially when you know you have a couple of months to kind of break it down with the 8 teams that were pretty much set for a few months now. But from your perspective, your team now, so in 2019, you get into that Eastern Conference final, but you don't win a game against Boston. Then, you know, the bubble comes and you lose against Boston after beating the Rangers. And last year, you lose against Tampa, who goes on to win the Stanley Cup. The last two playoffs were obviously different than the one in 2019, but the team has grown. Do you feel, especially with the goaltending now, that your group is better suited for playoff hockey, having some experience and now having the goaltending? Or did you feel that way last year? How's your feeling about your team this year compared to that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think, I feel like getting in is the hardest part. I feel like once you get in, it's anybody's game and just things have to line up for sure. But I do feel that having that experience and having, not me, but the players that have gone through the defeats, and for the most part, our core group has stayed, that's going to benefit them. I feel that. I mean, it's, you know, you know how it is. You feel like you have to learn to lose before you learn to win, and or go through that. And it's just knowing how hard it is to win and how hard, it, you know, what has to go on, especially in this playoffs. I mean, it's crazy. So I think our guys have got a taste of it, and I think, you know, I look at Aho's and I just know how much they want to win. I think going through those kind of kick in the teeth, you know, moments is only going to make them stronger. And does it mean we're going to win? No. But does it give us a little more, I think, a better edge than we had last year and the year before? I would hope so.
Rod, I would love to get your opinion on a bigger picture thing, if you'd indulge me. We've had arguments on our podcast, and people have had arguments for the last month about the MVP, who's gonna win the MVP in the league, and what the MVP is. To you, is it a best player award? Is it an MVP award? Like, how do you look at who the MVP of the league is when you look around?
It's a little combination of both. Naturally, it will be. I mean, but I think the MVP is the guy that helps his team win the most, whatever that means. You know, you guys can debate that. It's, you know, is it the best player in the league? Could be, you know, depending on if they win. But I think, you know, that's a tough one now. We have so many good players that are helping their team get better. And without them on their team, they wouldn't be good or as good. And that's what an MVP is for me, is elevating the players around them to, you know, have a chance to win the whole thing. So I think the MVP has to be a guy that elevates his team to, if not the Stanley Cup, close to it.
Where do you stand with goalies on that list then? So rare for goalies to win.
Is it fair for goalies to win?
I said it's rare for goalies to win.
Rare, but I don't know why they don't, because realistically, that's the most important position. And, you know, maybe it's because they have their own trophy. Don't they have their own one?
Yeah.
So maybe that's probably why they get left off. But I mean, if your goalie can help you, you know, get to the final dance type thing and win it all, I don't know why he wouldn't be considered as the MVP.
Now I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit after I warmed you up with a little bit of a softball question. Who's your MVP?
Oh, I got 20 of them.
Number 21 is going to be upset.
I mean, we definitely have it's interesting because we don't have one guy that you would name. You could probably name two or three guys that, you know, are our top guys, but I don't know. That's a good question. I can't give you one. It's not because I'm leaving somebody out. Give me ask me that in 2 or 3 months. Maybe if I'm still hanging around and we're playing, I'll have a better answer for you.
Right.
Well, he'll be the Conn Smythe guy.
Fine by me.
Oh, we'll end it there, Rod. Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for hopping on with us. All right.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. See you soon.
See ya. Bye.
Great stuff there from Rod. The Carolina Hurricanes, by the time you listen to this, could have clinched a playoff berth. So we'll see on that. They're getting in. It's just a matter of when at this point. Sean, I did want to go back, though, to the discussion we were having prior to the interview with Rod. And we talked about Edmonton and Calgary and all that. I brought up Vegas. But one team we didn't talk about was the Los Angeles Kings. So let's get into them a little bit. As we speak today, Wednesday, they have 10 games left. There's so much talk about how Vegas has played a lot of games, right? Well, Vegas has a game in hand right now on LA. They're going to use that game in hand tonight, Wednesday night. 10 games left for the Kings. Yes, they're 9-6-3 in their past 18 games. Their penalty kill has been dynamic, actually, in the past 10. They even got 3 shorthanded goals. They are, though, a team that I worry of the teams there in the West. You know, you look at the teams in the race there, Vegas, Dallas, Nashville, Edmonton, all these teams as they're jockeying to get in. The Kings might be the team I worry about the most, because outside of the few guys who know what it takes, it's hard. You know, they don't have a lot of experience in that area. Yes, they have a little bit of an edge on Vegas right now and a little bit of an edge on Dallas, but Dallas has a lot of games to play still. I do worry a little bit about the Kings and if they can close this out. Now, mind you, I'll say that, Sean, their last, 6 games of the season, Columbus, Anaheim, Chicago, Anaheim again, Seattle and Vancouver. So it's a soft part of a schedule to close, but I just still wonder if they're going to have enough to finish this thing out. They've been in it all the way. Can they finish it out?
I don't know if they can. I mean, injuries, you know, we talk about Vegas and the injuries they have. The Kings have some injuries and Drew Doughty being the biggest among them. I think he's so important to what they do. You know, before he got hurt, he had 31 points in 39 games. The Olympics were on the horizon before that got pulled. And, you know, you knew he was going to play well to try and force his way into that team, because people had already dismissed him from that conversation and from being an elite defenseman conversation in the league. And I think he was proving people wrong, and he's been out for such a long time now. And, you know, all the credit to the Kings to move on from that and fight their way into this conversation, because this was not a team that any of us had in the conversation at the start of the year.
Right.
But where do the points come from? How are they going to get in? And if they get in, what are they going to do? They have one player that has more than 50 points this year. And you can talk about depth and you can talk about, oh, things are spread out, but they don't have a game breaker. Kempe has 31 goals. First time he's done it, he's never had more than 14. After that, Dano has 21 and Kopitar has 18. You take two of those guys out, you check them out of the series, who's going to score that big goal that you need? And that's, I look at the Kings and I'm like, I don't know where that offense comes from.
And that's even talking if they get in, right? So you know, then, and I understand your point, and I 100% agree with it. You know, but at the same time, it's just a matter of getting in. And like I said, their schedule, it looks soft, but they're missing Drew Doughty. And I think Dustin Brown's still out too.
Yeah. And you could say it's soft as much as you want. Ask half the teams in the East or the Colorado Avalanche how soft the Buffalo Sabres are on the verge of elimination. Like, you can look at teams and say, oh, that's a soft game. There's no soft games, especially for these teams that are out. Like, A, they have nothing, no pressure, nothing to play for, so they're out enjoying being spoilers. And B, they're putting all kinds of young players in their lineup that are hungry to do something, to say, I belong here for next year. And you know, you're running into game 78 and you're like, oh my God, the playoffs are in 4 days. My legs are dead. I don't know what I'm going to do. And all of a sudden you go line up for the first faceoff, and here's a 21-year-old kid with a ton of skill who's just chomping at the bit, asking you how you're doing. And then he's going to skate into the ground for 25 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think the Anaheim Ducks don't want to be the team that knocks the LA Kings out of a chance, right? And they play them twice, you know, at the end here. So that, look, the odds are probably in the Kings' favor to get in. I would think that they are. I'm not an odds man, but I would imagine that they are. But they are, of the teams there, the one that concerns me. They're also, they haven't been playing all that well either. You know, I mean, it's not like the Oilers have won five in a row. The Vegas Golden Knights have won five in a row. The Kings are just kind of middling along. In their last five, they're 2-2-1, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. The other team I wanted to touch on, because they're part of that race too, and that is a fascinating race in the West, the Dallas Stars. So here come the Dallas Stars. They're 4-1 in their last five, 7-2 in their last nine. They have the most games left, 13, but let's take a look at their schedule, Sean. They play three sets of back-to-backs, and from March 29th through April 23rd, three sets of back-to-back in between there, and three sets of three games in four nights. It's a lot of hockey in a short amount of time. That's also something that you have to look at as you kind of try to analyze where these teams can shake out. I like Dallas. I think they're a veteran team that's been there. They understand what's going on. They have an ability to rise. I think I like them even more than I like LA, if we were to just put them put them up against each other. But again, you're talking about a team that's making up a lot of games here in a short period of time.
Yeah, and they don't have a lot of room for error. Like, there's a two-game losing streak is going to be killer for them. But all their big guys have come out,
mm-hmm.
and their big guys have answered. Since March 1st, Jason Robertson has 16 points and 10 goals in 17 games. Klingberg has 15 points. Hintz has 14 points, and Jamie Benn has 14 points. Like, they've all basically looked at the schedule, looked at what they have to do, and said, here we come. Like, we're going to empty the gas tank to get to where we need to go. And hunting can be fun, right? Like, hunting down teams can be fun because, again, you know, you've been written off. Oh, look at Dallas. They're so far back. And now you start making strides. And then all of a sudden, those teams who have kind of said, oh, we're in a playoff spot, are looking down, and the cushion is nowhere near as close as it is. And then the sticks start getting gripped tighter, and there's more scoreboard watching than there has been in the past. And nine times out of 10, the team that's chasing and hunting is having more fun doing it than the team that's being chased and hunted.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And you look like they're, you know, okay, they did lose to Seattle, but before that, they won games against San Jose, two against Anaheim. They just beat the New York Islanders. You know, for the most part, they're winning games that they have to win in order to stay in this race and keep climbing in this race. They have a lot of home games coming up too, a number of them actually, of these games that they're going to be playing. It's a tough part of the schedule, no doubt, because the amount there will be playing, and you're also relying heavily on a goaltender who's never really gotten you there before, and Jake Ottinger, but he's been solid too. But I think you bring up a good point though, Sean, because you're right. You know, a number of those guys, they're big guys, at the time you need them, have come out to play and that's what you want to see. If you're the Dallas Stars, you can't say to yourselves, well, how are we going to get this done and all that? You got to do it. And they did it for a while too, without Miro Heiskanen as well, who I think is their best defenseman too. So they're, I like them. I do. I had them. Where'd you have them? I had them in my Super 16 at 16, one spot below the LA Kings. But it's just, I think they're another team. Like, you had the Tampa Bay Lightning low. I can see myself moving Dallas up a little bit. Again, Vegas got in higher. Edmonton got in higher because of their winning streaks for me. And LA just sitting there in a better spot. They get in a little bit higher. But I think Dallas is a team that could be moving up. You had them at 13. You know, so you actually, I think, believe in them a little bit more than I do.
I do. And again, part of it is because of how well their best players have played when they've needed to play. And the other thing is, look, a lot of times you're looking at this huge gap to make, you know, it's kind of like the Tour de France. You have this huge gap to make to get to the front, and you just know you're going to be passed anyways, right? That it's not really going to matter because there's going to be somebody else that's better, and they're going to nip you at the line, and you have to put in all this work. But the Dallas Stars believe they know, let me get in.
Right.
And then anything can happen. It happened to them recently. Like, everybody in that room knows, we get into the playoffs, watch out. I don't care that Daryl Sutter said, if we get into the playoffs and we're going to go into Colorado, and we're going to waste 8 days and it's going to be hellish. Like, give me that chance. We've done it once before. We'll go do it again. So there's a confidence in what's at the end of the rainbow. It's not uncertain. You're not a team that's like, oh, well, maybe we get in at 8 and then we get our lunch handed to us. It's like, no, we finish this 10 games. We finish it and we get in, and people are going to be nervous to play us.
Well, I think they would be. Yeah. I 100% think they'd be nervous to play. I think Dallas is a scary team. They got a lot of talent. They have really good defensemen, and they've got a young goaltender who's been proving it all season long. So they are a scary team. The other one there, and I wanted to bring this back to something, I think it was last week that you said, Sean. We had Emily Benjamin, our colleague from Boston, on last week, and we were talking about the Hart Trophy, and you brought up Roman Josi. So let's bring in the Nashville Predators to this, because they're also in the middle of this, you know, race, you know, near the bottom of the playoff race there in the Western Conference. But you brought up Roman Josi, and I don't say it took me by surprise when you brought up Roman Josi for a Hart Trophy, because I kept thinking Norris Trophy for him, right? That's what you think. And I guess the same thing also with Igor Shesterkin. You think Vezina Trophy. You know, I was leaning Hart Trophy for him. Well, Roman Josi hasn't slowed down at all. And now, Sean, I'm going to tell you, I think you're right. Like, it doesn't happen often that I'm going to say that, but I think you're right that Roman Josi should absolutely be maybe the favorite at this point for the Hart Trophy, because this guy could get 100 points. He's got 64 points in the last 44 games that he's played. The Predators are 28, 14, and 2 in those games. He's got 10 more points than Cale Makar in that 44-game stretch. He's got 9 more points than anybody else on his team, I think, in that, you know, stretch, or to 9, 10, 12, something along those lines. He's a defenseman, and he's constantly in the play. And, it's to me, like, he is, without question, the biggest reason the Nashville Predators are where they are right now. I think you can make a strong case for Roman Josi to be the Hart Trophy winner this season as we stand right now. And it kills me to agree with you on this.
You always come around, Dan. Always. Sometimes it takes a long time. You know, sometimes it's a week later, but I'm always right. But look, I'm always proven right, and I'll be proven right again here.
Somebody asked me the other day, could you make a case for Cale Makar to win the Norris Trophy and Roman Josi to win the Hart Trophy? And you might be able to make that case. Right. You might be able to, but though I think Josi's going to win the Hart, how does he not voted the best defenseman? Right. I mean, there is that, you know, how do you not do that? He's the most valuable player. He's got to be the best defenseman too. Right. But you can sort of fudge it a little bit, but I think he's past Cale Makar in the Norris, at least.
I don't think you can make that argument, especially with Cale Makar, because of the other players he has on his team.
Right.
If he's not the most valuable player in the league, then he's not the most valuable player on his team. And you know, the same thing with the defenseman. Like, I think Roman Josi's having a better year as a defenseman than Cale Makar is. And I don't feel bad about saying that at all. Like, I just think the numbers prove it. And I know, I think it was in this week's mailbag that you tackled this a little bit, and somebody asked, you know, if there should be an award for offensive defensemen. And I believe you said no.
No. Yeah, I said no.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that. Like, and look, Josi would win them all, so it doesn't really matter. But I do think for the Norris, we've gotten into the habit of looking at the points and saying, oh, well, he leads the league in points and he's got a good plus minus because of that, and therefore he's the best defenseman. I don't think that's true. I think introducing a Bobby Orr award for offensive production, and look, Bobby Orr was a great all-around defenseman, but you don't want to change the Norris. You know, that's what it's been forever. So you introduce a Bobby Orr award, and it is for the highest scoring defenseman, and it's not a it's like the Art Ross, right? But it's just for defensemen. And then the Norris, I think at times you'd feel a little bit better going off the board a little bit and saying, I think this guy is the best defenseman in the league, but he's eighth in scoring. And it gives you the freedom to be able to do that. So, but in this case, I think not only is Roman Josi the highest scoring defenseman in the league, but he's probably the best defenseman in the league this year. He's won a Norris before. It's not like we're talking about somebody that's just on a heater.
Right.
Like, no, he is an elite defenseman. Yeah. But everybody put Cale Makar in the driver's seat from day one and never backed off of it. And it doesn't seem to matter what anybody does. Right. Well, Cale Makar is winning the Norris this year. He's due. It's his time. Well, I think Roman Josi has decided it is not his time.
It is not, yeah.
And he's got a lot more chances to win it, and Cale Makar has a lot more chances to win it, but 2021-22 will not be when he does it.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that, and I think you can, like I was saying, I think you make the case for Hart Trophy, certainly for Josi as well. Here's the thing with what you're saying about two awards for a defenseman, and I wrote this in the mailbag, and the reason I disagree with you is the old adage, and it's exactly what I wrote. The old adage is the best defense is a good offense, right? Both of, you know, you look at guys as they're the top defensemen in the league are great offensive, they're scorers. They're great offensive defensemen too. That's where they get the Norris Trophy. But the idea is to play less in your defensive end and more in the offensive end. That's good defense when you're playing offense, right? So let's give them credit for that. Let's give them credit for being able to not play as much in their own end. And when they do, very rarely get beat, transition the puck out of their end as good as anybody else in the league, as better than anybody else in the league, jump into the play, be part of the offense, and then still be able to get back and play defense if, you know, need be. They're not getting beat in their defensive end. They're not poor in their defensive end. They're just not playing a lot in their defensive end because they're so good with the puck. And that is why I think voters need voters should be given credit for understanding what that is about and that being good defense. There are guys out there who will get more D zone starts than O zone starts and they'll grind it out and they'll battle in front of the net and they won't give up much there and they'll be really good defensively and all that, but they don't transition the puck out of their own end very well. Not like these guys do. The idea is to not play in your end. Like that's part of the position. To play offense too. And that's why I don't think you need a separate trophy for defensemen. The best defenseman can be the best scoring defenseman. He's on the ice to do that. So I don't see the need for the separation in that at all. The Art Ross Trophy can be given to a defenseman. You know, it's nothing stopping that. It's happened before, right? So it's the Art Ross Trophy is for all players. The Hart Trophy should be for all players. The Rocket Richard Trophy is for all players. The Norris Trophy is for defensemen only. And you know what? The best defenseman can be the best scoring defenseman. And it is this season, and it has been many, many times.
Then why do we have a Selke Award, Dan?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a great question. Why do we?
Because there is a need for one, because players that play well defensively aren't always going to be celebrated, and it's half the game. It's half the game. Look, Patrice Bergeron scores a lot of points. He wins a lot of Selke trophies, but he wins them because he's really good in his own end. And yes, part of it is because he plays in the other end, but when he is in his own end, he's really good. And there should be an opportunity for a defenseman who is middling. Like, you think about this year, and we don't even talk about Victor Hedman, right, as part of the Norris Trophy this year, because he has 66 points. And there's players that have way more points than he does. Fox, McCarr, guys like that. Devin Toews, right? Like, and you're telling me that Victor Hedman is the sixth best defenseman because he has 66 points?
No,
you have to take his whole game into account. And I don't think it's done enough. And I think if you gave a voter the opportunity to say, well, Roman Josi is going to win the Bobby Orr Award, now I can be more whole in how I look at the Norris Trophy, because it's really hard to look at a guy who dominates offensively and say he's not the best defenseman. But I don't think that's true. In this case, it's not true. To me, Roman Josi would win everything to do with the defenseman. But there's certainly been years when the best offensive defenseman is not the best defenseman in the league. And there should be an opportunity to celebrate the two. And why wouldn't you want more awards? Like, it's more people to bask in the spotlight. It's more people to say, here's what it is. Like, here's all our great players, and let's add another one to the list.
Yeah.
Why do we always try and keep everything so elite? There can only be this. There can only be that. And these are the only players that can be good. We can't enter these other people into it. And it's so close-minded. Like, let's celebrate what's good about our game.
I think in most cases, the Norris Trophy winner would be the Bobby Orr Trophy winner too. So anyway, it's a great argument. I don't think there's a need for two trophies, but I understand what you're saying, especially what you said there at the end. You want to celebrate more guys. I get that. I agree with that. It's a good debate. But before we close the podcast, we have to give the due respect to Ryan Getzlaf. He announces his retirement effective end of this season. I love that Ryan Getzlaf gets to go out on his own terms, healthy, hopefully, feeling good, as he said. And I mean, you look at this guy's career. He's the best all-time, best player in Ducks history, which, look, it's no small feat to say you're the best player in a franchise history, unless you're saying like Vegas or Seattle, which are brand new, obviously. 1,150 games, 1,013 points, 125 playoff games, 120 playoff points. He won the cup. He won the gold medal twice. He's going into the Hall of Fame. I mean, all I can say is congratulations to Ryan Getzlaf on a terrific career. And I think it's great. He's doing what a lot of players would love to be able to do, go out on their own terms when they're feeling good and confident in what they have established and what they are leaving behind in the National Hockey League.
I'm glad you think he's going into the Hall of Fame, Dan, because a lot of people don't, which to me is shocking, right? He's never won a major award, which is they're going to hold against him. But to me, like you said, he's the best player in a franchise's history, and it's a franchise that's accomplished stuff. They've won a cup. I love press conferences like that. Like, even though that at times they're uncomfortable, I've covered Ryan Getzlaf his whole career. I covered the Stanley Cup, that they won when he was a young man with Corey Perry, who he called out to kind of say, you know, he's the most important guy, and I wish he was still with me, but that's the business we're in. I've really seen Ryan Getzlaf as emotional as he was in that press conference. And it's always nice to see that side of a player, because you always see the serious side and you never see, like, it's emotional for them, you know, to end a career. And I thought maybe the best part, a lot of it was a surprise to him. He thought he was meeting the media and his family was there, his wife, his kids, his mom and dad, a lot of people. But then they went through the list of players who showed up for this, and that's always the testament, right? Like, who's going to show up when you're going to say goodbye? And you think about the impact that Ryan Getzlaf, he's defined that organization from the minute he arrived until the last home game when he says goodbye to everybody. He has defined the culture there, and it's been an elite culture for a lot of years. Yes, they're going through a rebuild now, and yes, it's going to be a tough couple of years. But they were an elite team for several years, and they were an elite team because of Ryan Getzlaff and how he dominated that room and made them a better team. So good for him on an excellent career and in what I believe is a Hall of Fame career as well. And it'll be strange next year to look at the Anaheim Ducks and not see Ryan Getzlaff as the captain out there.
Yeah, he leaves behind a giant void, and not just because he's a big man. I mean, it's a giant void that this guy leaves behind. He's been the leader of that team for a very long time. But like I said, he recognized when the time was right for him. You know, I loved his line where he said, "I want to be able to go play with my kids, not watch my kids play." I think that was really telling about what he has in, lined up for his immediate future. And Sean, I can see Ryan Getzlaff being a guy that gets into, you know, an executive role in some capacity, maybe even with Anaheim, you know, similar to the sense of, I don't know if he'll be a GM, but similar to the sense of like a Joe Sakic or a Steve Yzerman or a Brendan Shanahan or, you know, along those lines, Chris Drury, guys who have been leaders their entire playing careers, and they become leaders for franchises, you know, in their post-playing career days. So I can absolutely see that from Ryan Getzlaff and wouldn't be surprised at all if it happened.
Yeah, no, the first guy I thought of was Billy Guerin, right? Yeah. Like he played like Billy played, like he was an elite. When he was at his peak, he was an elite power forward that nobody wanted a piece of. Nobody wanted to mess with Ryan Getzlaff in front of the net, when the gloves dropped, whenever it was. Like he was just a mountain of a man, and he was mean at a time when you could be really mean in hockey and carve out the space that you needed. And, you know, that's kind of the way that Billy played the game. And I could see the same kind of thing where now, you know, he takes his time and kind of goes through the ranks and eventually, because he understands how to build a team. You know, that was to me, one of the best things about him being the captain in Anaheim is he understood how to bring so many disparate elements together. And he talked about it in his speech. Like we've come from all over the world together to play a game that we've loved since we've been little kids. And we had to come together despite all our varied interests and beliefs and everything else into a championship team. And he was able to do it once, and he got Anaheim close a couple more times. So he certainly understands what a team needs to be successful, that it needs various components and what those components are and how to identify them.
Yeah, I think that's in his future. Our future will be back next week when we do another podcast. But until then, you know, rate us, review us, follow us on Twitter at The Rink. The playoffs are around the corner. The games are heating up. Goals are coming like crazy, like in Florida and Toronto. Enjoy it all.